Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the H-Band Podcast, your go-to podcast for longevity policy discussion. I'm your host, Dylan Livingston. Today, I am sitting down with Anar Isman, CEO of Ageless RX. In this episode, we discussed Anar's entrepreneurial journey, which led him to become the CEO of Ageless RX, his thoughts on what the next generation of longevity science entails, and the power of social media and memes in building a movement. Without further ado, here's Anar Isman.
Live long and prosper.
All right, Anar, thank you so much for joining the H-Band podcast. It's great to have you on. I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time, and so I'm glad we could finally set a little time aside and have this conversation. So thanks for joining.
For sure. Yeah, I'm very excited. It's a privilege to be here.
Yeah, well, it's a privilege to have you. So the way I like to start these conversations usually is I like to go on a deep dive on our guests, and I like to have our guests explain what brought them to this longevity field, because every story is unique and different. And I know there are personal motivations, I know there are financial motivations, I know there are medical motivations. So can you tell us a little bit about your motivation for getting into the longevity field? What led you to become the CEO of Ageless RX and the passionate longevity supporter that you are?
Definitely. The fact that you even have to ask this question tells me that we still have a lot of work to do ahead of us, right? Because if we were trying to cure cancer or tackle something else that's considered a horrible thing by majority of people, no one would be asking. No one says, "Oh, why do you want to cure cancer?" It goes along without having to explain that. Versus when it comes to trying to cure aging or slow it down or advancing the longevity movement, people saying, "Oh, that's so interesting. Why are you doing that?" I can't think of anything more important than slowing down aging, right? To me, that's the biggest atrocity that's out there. That's a cause of biggest amount of suffering. If you think about it, every single person is going to be impacted by it. Everyone is impacted, everyone's relatives. And it's not just that it kills you, which is horrible in itself. It also robs you of your ability to do things you love with people you love, and you can't see, you can hear, your cognitive ability is gone, you can't do physical activities, you can't walk or run or play sports. If we had a tool that could make a 30-year-old person feel like a 90-year-old person and we used it as punishment, it would be considered a cruel and unusual punishment and it would be made illegal, right? You couldn't just put someone in jail and say, "Okay, we're going to turn you into a 90-year-old." Everyone would say, "Oh my God, that's horrible, horrific." But nonetheless, we all are subject to this over years, and just because it takes longer, everyone says, "Oh, that's fine, nothing wrong with it." And I just don't think that there's anything more important than trying to slow it down or delay it for as much as possible. And that's the interesting thing, is this is what kind of has been on my mind ever since I was a kid. Ever since I was, as far as I remember, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, back then when I would talk to any of the adults, they would all tell me, "What is this? This is silly, this is stupid. Focus on going to school and trying to make as much money as possible. That's the number one priority." And so that's what I did for a while because I trusted the adults in the room. And then when I became an adult myself and I revisited it, I realized, no, that's not the right way to do things. We should actually try to change the world. And that's when I started going to conferences, meeting people, talking to people, and realized that thankfully I'm not the only one who thinks that way. There's many other people, but just not as many as there should be.
Agreed. And that's partially why we do these podcasts. That's partially why A4LI does the work that it does. And I know Ageless RX is a passionate supporter of many organizations in the field that are trying to get the word out and raise awareness and get more people involved. So I thank you, but I agree. This is a no-brainer for me too, right? You post on social media a good bit, these pictures of like celebrities and movie
Yeah.
stars in their prime, and then you put them side by side with their current self, which is more aged and a little less functional. And I find them very powerful. And the way you break them down too is you say, this is, let's say, Robert De Niro, whoever it is, 9,000 days after this, he shot this movie and he can't do the things that he used to because of aging. What made you start posting those? That's my first question. But yeah, how'd you come up with that idea? Because it's powerful. And when you break it down by the days that have elapsed, it's broken down in a more consumable way, I think, for me to rationalize it all. How do you think that up?
I'm trying to get the word out there and help make the mindset that aging is bad and we should do something, and it should be one of our top priorities, should be doing something about it, mainstream mindset. Unfortunately, it's nowhere near that, right? When I talk to people about slowing down aging and about longevity movement, 9 out of 10 people would tell me why we shouldn't be doing it, right? They come up with all kinds of reasons. Oh, really? Why? It's a natural, or how about our population? How about this? Life is already long. Like all these other reasons, which we can talk about why they're actually not logical, but nonetheless, they're top of mind for people. So I thought that, hey, maybe I can try to help change some minds by being on social media. And this is one of those logical examples that's right in your face, and it's hard to argue with, even though people still do, right? But then also putting it in the units of days, when you think about it, right? Like I'm 40, and on based on an average life expectancy, I have another 40 years, which is only like 15,000 days. That's not that long, right? Unfortunately. So putting it in a matter of days versus years, I hope will help people understand that this is, if you were creating a world from blank slate, from scratch, I doubt anyone would say, let's see, let's put it at 22,000 days. You live, you're born, and then within 22,000 days, you lose all your functional abilities, and then you're gone. Like, why 22,000? Why not 50,000? Why not 100,000? What is that memo that I missed that said 22,000 is absolutely perfect number? It shouldn't be any other number. You know, that's
right.
An interesting thing when you argue with people, they're saying, oh, we shouldn't do it. But why have you decided that 70, 80 years is this optimal number? Like, why isn't it 50 years? Like, if you told people, hey, there's a country out there that this ridiculous dictator who said, as soon as someone turns 80, we're going to kill all of them. Like, every day we're going to round up people who turn 80 and we're going to kill them. I think there'd be a big outroar. People would say, oh, no, this is ridiculous. We should stop them. But nonetheless, that's what aging does. And everyone says, that's fine. There's nothing we should do about it.
I'm forgetting the exact name, but Vitalik Buterin and I think Nick Bostrom are big proponents of the dragon fable. I know the story of it, right? And just accept it until one or two or a few people realize that, no, you shouldn't just accept this as a reality of ours. We should try to slay the dragon, and the dragon here is aging, right? So I agree with you. I think, would you agree with this statement though? I think you've been in the field for at least over a decade, but you've been interested in it for multiple decades now. Do you see a difference in mainstream thinking? Because I feel like in the few years I've been involved, this has become more top of mind, even though it's not, in my opinion, I'm sure yours too, where it should be in terms of priorities in the world. It should be number one, the number one priority, and it's not. But it's people are, I think, becoming more privy to the issue. Would you agree with that?
I think generally, yes. And directionally, I think it's moving in the right direction, but still, right? Like you went from 1 out of 100 people to 3 out of 100 people. Like, and at that pace, unfortunately, it will take very long. I don't even know how long, but much more than you or I or next few generations can afford to actually make meaningful progress.
Agreed.
But yeah, that's definitely moving in the right direction. And then I also remember one of the reasons why it might be also useful for people to see photos of celebrities when they were in the prime and when they're now is everyone always thinks, oh, look at that old guy. I feel so bad. Like he's traveling, he can't even raise his own suitcase into the storage and on the airplane. But that's that old guy. That's not me. I'm still sitting here young and vibrant. And guess what? That's you. Just fast forward 10,000 days.
Right.
That's the only difference between you and that old guy was young. There's we almost treat, oh, these old people, it's like a different race. No, it's the same race. It's the same people. The only difference is a different time dimension. And it's not like it happens only to average person or common folks. It happens to everyone, including the most brilliant, powerful, influential people, right? Like the top of, unfortunately, it happens to everyone. And I think maybe, like, we're approaching this period where, based on kind of when TV was invented and when Hollywood became mainstream, that, like, I've seen it in the last 10 years where a lot of, like, my parents' favorite actors have passed away. They got old, they became 90s or even before, and then they passed away. And over the next 10, 20 years, we'll approach the point where a lot of our people I get into that point, right? Tom Cruise is 60. Like in 10, 10 years, he's gonna be 80. I think it might be like an eye-opening moment for people who are like, wow, like our celebrities are now approaching that time when we haven't seen them in this kind of captive capacity. And hopefully that might be one of those alarm bells for people to say, oh, we should do something about it. It's not just my parents' generation, it's now our generation. There's been a lot more of them, right? All this, like Jennifer Aniston, Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, George Clooney, like in 10 years being in their 70s or close to their 70s, I think might be an eye-opening moment for people.
I agree with you that if we continue on this linear scale of raising awareness, where we're going from one to three over the last 5 years in terms of out of 100 who knows or cares about the field, I do agree that if we continue on the linear path, it'll take far too long for anybody alive today to actually benefit from these therapeutics, or maybe someone just born will benefit, something like that. But I think we want to bring longevity medicine to the masses that are alive today as soon as possible. That's my goal, at least. We want to get these interventions, therapeutics, medical devices, whatever they may be, to help us live healthier for longer, into the hands of as many people, not only for the moral reasons, but the economic reasons. Obviously, we're heading towards an aging demography, which I'll talk to you a little bit about. But what I do believe is that there will be inflection points in that curve, right? I think if nobody gave a crud about AI until ChatGPT came around, right? Right now, I'm sure back in 2010, when the AI enthusiasts were getting together, they were saying this is going way too slow. But 14 years later, here, 14, 15, oh my goodness, it's almost 2025. Here we are, right? And everybody knows about ChatGPT, and it's mainstream and integrated in everyone's lives. So that's what I'm hoping will happen. That's what I expect will happen with the longevity effort. I think that moment is coming sooner rather than later. That's my hope, at least. There's a ton of really promising companies, researchers doing this work, and there are funds available to research in this field. Just in my opinion, not enough. We need as many shots on goal as we can, and we need improving medicine year over year. Our work as advocates, even if we get that ChatGPT moment, will not cease to will not cease. It'll not end. This is about making better medicine over time, and having that ChatGPT moment not just a fad. I want to jump a little bit back into your entrepreneurial journey, because I think a part of what we like to do here on the H-Band podcast is show that this field is really diverse and who is interested in making a difference. A lot of people are researchers, some are academics, some are industry. You come from an entrepreneurial background. You started your first company at 21, which you got me beat there, Anar. I started A4LI at 23, so you got that on me. Can you tell us a little bit about your professional journey before aging, just to briefly touch on it, and what were the steps that got you leading Ageless Rx?
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, sure. Your A4LI is definitely much more successful than my first company, and hopefully will be much more successful going forward. Let's see. As far as from my professional background, I went to University of Michigan, and I started when I was 16 because I graduated high school early. And at the time, the advice I'd gotten was there's only three potential paths. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, or a banker. There's nothing else to think about. And that's the place where there's the biggest amount of money to be made and the biggest job security coming from, like this Jewish family of former Soviet Union. And I listened to that advice and I went to business school. And the best job at the time was investment banking with the eventual pathway to investment funds and hedge funds and things like that. So I did that, right? Ever since I graduated when I was 20, I did it for the next 15 years or so. And that was great experience. It taught me how to think critically. Then at the end of the day, when you're doing investments, what you're really trying to do is you're trying to predict the future, because hope you're saying, hey, this is what I think is going to happen, and you place bets, and hopefully the more your bets are right than wrong. And in some ways that translates to longevity, because hey, I can predict the future. I know what's going to happen to all of us if we're staying on the same trajectory, right? And at some point in my early 30s, 10 years ago, I just had to build something. I had always had this entrepreneurial thing. When you talk about the company I started when I was 21, I started buying just rental properties. That's what I was doing. But then at some point, I realized that I want to do something that will change the world, something that's very meaningful. And I couldn't think of anything more important than advancing the movement of longevity. And so that's when we decided to start Ageless Rx. And even within that, like why Ageless Rx and not something else, is because like I can tell you about what Ageless does, but why we're doing it, right, is to help advance the movement. And Ageless is the kind of company that has direct access to an audience, right? We're a direct-to-consumer company, so we have access to the audience, and that's what we use to try to evangelize and tell them our story and tell them why they should all think about longevity being one of the most important issues to advance. That's why we started Ageless, to advance the longevity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. My next question was going to be, can you tell us about Ageless RX? Can you give us an overview? Direct to consumer, I feel like, is a little bit rarer in the field these days. So I think you guys have a nice little market carved out for yourselves. So can you talk a little bit about what you're doing at Ageless RX, some of the work you guys are undertaking?
Yeah, definitely. Ageless RX is, so I'll talk about what we do. I already mentioned why we do it, but what we do, it's telemedicine platform focused on longevity that tries to give people access to protocols and interventions that have potential to optimize their health and extend their lifespan. And hopefully eventually we'll get to a point where there are interventions out there that can extend someone's lifespan materially beyond what's currently considered conventional lifespan. We're not there yet, but hopefully that's something that, and I'm pretty optimistic that over the next 10, 20 years, there will be some things like that. You mentioned in terms of how long it took for something like AI. Another an analogy out there is crypto, right? 10 years ago, if you talked about Bitcoin, people would laugh you out of the room. Today, it's a major industry, and some of the things they've done, I think, could be replicated for longevity in a pretty analogous way, especially if you think about even from the some of the policy angles where they had a super PAC and they had some of the initiatives to educate legislators on the benefits of the crypto. I think that's also something we can do in the longevity space. Because if you think about it, at the end of the day, there's so much division between left and Republicans, Democrats, but one thing all of us have in common is aging, right? It's a kind of like this common enemy that we should all be able to rally against.
Agreed. You know, when I talk about the caucus that we formed, I always mention that it's bipartisan, and then I say, I like to give myself a pat on the back on that, but it's not me at all. I did not do anything special there. It's this issue, right? This issue is unique in that, like you mentioned, everybody ages, no matter what race, nationality, creed, political affiliation, whatever, however you want to slice it, this affects everybody, right? And so I think this is a unifying issue, something that Republicans and Democrats can really get behind. And we're starting to see that in Congress, right? I am excited for this incoming administration, specifically with the appointment of people like Jim O'Neill, who has been a long-time longevity supporter for years. So I think the time is coming now, and I know on the Democratic side there's similar enthusiasm. Hopefully, 2025 will be a big year for the longevity political movement. That's my expectation, at least.
Yeah, it's definitely as we can be as bullish as we've ever been
Yes.
on the potential of longevity movement. Hopefully, it'll come to fruition. But yeah, Jim O'Neill and even Dr. I'll butcher his last name, Macquarie, right? He's also very, very pro longevity. So definitely some opportunity there. And another thing, if you listen to Marc Andreessen had the podcast where they talked about the crypto super PAC, one of the reasons he mentioned it was so effective and so successful is because that was one of the issues where there was no one arguing against them. Like it was just one, once you educated someone, they said, yeah, sure, makes sense. Like there was no one arguing for the other side of the story. And the same thing with longevity. Like it's hard to imagine that there'll be some opposing force out there arguing against it. So it's just a matter of us having the resources to educate our point of view. And it's almost easier in some sense because you don't have to also debate the other point. You just have to get yours out.
The limiting factor to effectiveness in a political, you can do more with less for sure. And I think we've probably fallen into that category of doing more with less, but politics is a game of raising money, right? And if we want to get this front and center, we need to have a constant advocacy effort. Anybody listening to this, if you want to put your money towards a good effort, consider supporting A4LI, because
Absolutely.
yeah,
Absolutely. And another thing, actually, I just posted about this yesterday on this topic that might be interesting for people. Other things I posted, like you mentioned, pictures of older celebrities when they were young and contrasting them. And that seems interesting to people and in some ways eye-opening. And another thing I do is I post these memes, right? We live in a world of memes where it's easier to communicate through memes. And it feels like to me there's all these resources are given and all this energy given to entertainment and enjoyment, right? If you think about it, shopping is a multi-trillion dollar industry, travel, vacations, casinos, movies, shows, restaurants and like all multi-trillion dollar industries, all these resources going towards them because we want to enjoy our life. But it's like, okay, so given how much all of us want to enjoy it, why don't we also want to extend it so we have more time to enjoy all these things, right? Like the meme I put out there, it's almost, okay, we spend all these resources making a party great. Why don't we also spend some time on making the party last longer?
I agree. Agree with you. When I'm having a good time, I don't want to stop partying. I think so. Well, that's an interesting point. I think an under-discussed topic in the longevity space is mental health. I think that the only real opposition that I've ever heard is people saying my life is really difficult and I struggle. So why would I want to add another 50 years of struggle to my life? Or why don't there's a lot that's the only real justification I've ever heard. And I think as advocates and as outspoken people in the field, we need to tie what we're doing more with mental health. We want to make sure that people have the will to live longer, and we want people to be happy enough to want to extend the amount of time that they're living in good health. So I don't know any solutions because I'm dealing with my own mental stuff, as I'm sure everybody else is, right? So I'm saying that tongue in cheek, but I don't have any solutions. But I think that's definitely a something that we want to echo more to the mainstream and say that we want to work hand in hand with mental illness advancements or advancements in combating mental illness.
That goes in some ways very well along with trying to slow down aging. When we say longevity and slowing down aging, that's a short form. And the long form is you want to try to delay onset of age-related damage, right? That's the technical term. And age-related damage is what causes cognitive decline. So if you can delay that damage, you can also delay some of that cognitive decline. So it goes with that, kind of goes along with that. But at the same time, right, people have this bipolar kind of relationship with when you talk about aging and longevity. Yes, definitely don't want to be struggling for the next 50 years. But it's also not like the idea here is that everyone is going to mandatorily be mandatorily forced into
Right,
taking
that is
advantage
true.
of some of the interventions. Like it gives you an option. If you want to do it, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. And also at the same time, everyone says, oh, we worried about being like losing our health and being in this cognitive decline state. And then you say, okay, fine, why don't government legalize euthanasia? Like anyone who wants to go out can check out. And somehow that's not legal.
Right.
Like why? Like why don't we let people check out when they want to check out? And anytime someone tries to commit a suicide, we dispatch all these resources to prevent them from doing suicide. Right? No one here says, oh, that person is struggling with cognitive, let them just do it. No, we try as hard as possible to prevent them from doing
Absolutely.
it.
Yeah, the euthanasia argument is definitely it's everybody in society knows that aging and getting old and sick and dying is bad, but then there's I wouldn't say pushback, but a lack of full buy-in from some people on this idea of not dying or trying to not die for as long as possible. I definitely fall into the camp of I would like to not die and whatever that means, right? Whatever it means is what it means, but I think everybody agrees that dying is bad and getting sick and older bad. You know what I was also going to say is a lot of I think mental health issues as you age also are a result of your declining physical capacity, right? If you are not someone, if you're someone at 50 who can't go and do the things that they were doing at 30, your life is not what it was when you were 30 and you can't partake in the activities that make you happy. So I think a lot of the mental health stuff, or some of it, hopefully a good amount of it, will be remedied by the fact that people are not sick when they're older too, and they have a little more ability to do things in the world. So.
Hopefully, but unfortunately, the really dark side of it is that our brain does shrink by roughly 1% every year after 40. So by the time from 40 to 80, you have lost 30, 40% of your brain mass, which is horrible, right? And we should try to do as much as possible to delay it, slow it down, which is what you would do if you try to slow down aging.
Right,
Like those two
100%.
things, go
100%. Yeah.
hand in hand.
I want to go on to my next question here, but I feel like we could probably talk about this for another 20 minutes. But we're talking about some of the ways that we can encourage people to live longer and want to live longer. And we also discussed the time frame of when we expect this field to become more mainstream than it is today in a sort of AI way. Being the direct to consumer CEO that you are, you're dealing with a lot of different technologies, dealing with a lot of different medications, therapeutics. So you probably have a really insightful view on what the next big thing is. What are your thoughts on therapeutic area of development, medical devices? Do you have anything you're quite bullish on in terms of what can be that ChatGPT moment?
Yeah, let me just tell you some of the share some of the ideas here, and maybe we'll go from some that are going to be effective, but maybe not the ChatGPT moment, and then some that are more like ChatGPT, but have a little more uncertainty around when they'll be available, right? But the most clear one right now is probably semaglutide, like everyone talks about Wegovy, Ozempic, GLP-1s, right? That might end up being our first truly like longevity intervention, right? We've seen so many downstream impacts, beneficial impacts of semaglutide beyond just weight loss, right? It's been approved for heart health, I think kidney, but also they're studying it now for delay in that cognitive impairment. So it potentially also helps slow down some of that cognitive deterioration. So semaglutide might end up being that longevity intervention. So that's really exciting. Beyond that, there's a few others, right? There's this, imagine everyone now eats too much sugar. Unfortunately, there's no way around it. Sugar or things that help make your glucose spike, right? Pizza, pasta, white rice that you get when you eat sushi, bakeries, things like that. So imagine if there was a pill that you could take that would make you excrete that sugar instead of that sugar going into your bloodstream and making your glucose spike. So actually, there's a drug like that. It's a family of drug called PCSK9. That's a drug that's been around for probably over 10 years at this point for diabetics. But actually, everyone eats too much sugar. And if there was a magic pill you could take that would make you excrete sugar instead of going to your bloodstream, this would be it. And it's available. So hopefully it's going to become much more available for people, and we'll make it available also through AgelessRx. But that's the one that I think would be really important, because right, what happens is, and this maybe some listeners don't, is that spikes in glucose are really bad for you. And over an extended period of time, if you have too many of the spikes, eventually your body becomes insulin resistant because insulin doesn't affect those sugar spikes not as effectively anymore. And then once you become insulin resistant, the next stop is pre-diabetic, and then it's diabetic, and this whole metabolic dysregulation that impacts all kind of different disease pathways. So that's another one that I think is really big. Beyond that, then there's peptides, and I think this incoming administration might be a little more open-minded about peptides, but there we don't know exactly. There's a lot of interesting preclinical data, but we don't know. Semaglutide is a peptide, but there's other peptides that also could be interesting. And then after that, when you get into more kind of ChatGPT type of area that's a little more theoretical, but could be very impactful, is probably something between gene therapy and reprogramming. Right? Those two could have material interesting impacts. Like gene therapy, there's already some gene therapies out there for some of the kind of smaller orphan diseases, but there's some gene therapies that some biohackers use that help with muscle gain or slowing down the loss of muscle. And so far, with limited numbers of people, seems to be working really well. But we'll see. So gene therapy, I think, could be very impactful. It's very expensive right now to develop gene therapies, unfortunately. If there was a change that could make it more affordable, I think there'll be more gene therapies targeting some of the kind of age-related damage kind of things.
And yeah, lowering the cost makes it plausible for insurance to get involved. And at that point, it's going to be common practice. So yeah, you maybe gave me an interesting policy idea. Let me ask you this. So we fast forward, let's say, 50 years into the future. We know what our current healthcare system looks like. We know what it's like to go to the doctor, get an MRI, get even preventative health measures addressed. What do you think the doctor's future of, what do you think, I'm going to take that part out. What do you think the doctor's office of the future looks like in 50 years? What is it going to mean to be a patient? How will these longevity therapeutics be integrated? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's funny. When we were fundraising for our company in 2020, that's how I started the presentation, by saying, imagine you go to the doctor and doctor says, "Hey, Dylan, I'm afraid I have bad news. You have this terminal disease. It's called aging." So that's the bad news. But the good news is there's some interventions we can give you, right? So I don't know exactly how the office will look in terms of the actual like layout or what kind of interventions they have, but I do hope that we'll start talking about it as if you got diagnosed with cancer, right? When you get diagnosed with terminal cancer, all of a sudden everyone is now on your team. Everyone wants you to succeed. Everyone wants you to do anything that's possible out there to beat that horrible thing. And versus when it comes to aging, which is another terminal disease, it's whatever. Dying from cancer is bad. Dying from aging, no problem. More power to you. And not just that, but at the same time, like people like Brian Johnson, for example, who are going to extreme lengths to actually try to slow down aging, they elicit this negative reaction from people. Oh, what is that weird person doing? If someone had cancer and they were doing anything possible to beat it, nobody would be making fun of them. Like
Right.
actually, if you made fun of them, you'd probably face opposition from other people who'd say, probably not nice to make fun of this terminal person who is trying to survive, versus someone who's trying to survive except for aging, is more people actually feel empowered to make fun of him and talk down to him. So I hope that the mindset shifts, right? Just to give you an anecdote, for example, I have a friend whose 70-year-old father had brain cancer, an unfortunately incurable tumor, and they've done everything possible that's out there, and then they had this new experimental procedure where they open up your skull and they implant something in your brain so that chemotherapy can be delivered directly to the tumor. And he opted out, he opted in for it, like they did it, right? And no one said, what? That is unnatural. This is so weird that you are opening up your skull and putting electrode in your brain. Everyone said, oh, I hope this works. Good luck to you.
Right. That's a powerful, there's definitely some, in my opinion, some of the negative feedback that people get who are doing this stems from the fact that aging or slowing your aging at the in the way that we're thinking through interventions, not just sleep and eating and all that kind of stuff, is it's something that people of higher socioeconomic status have an easier time doing than others. And so part of what A4LI is set out to do is to even the playing field and get some of these therapeutics or all of these therapeutics make access to all of these therapeutics available to all people. So I think as time progresses, how like the iPhone was sort of a rich snobby person phone back in 2005, and now every person and their mother has a as an iPhone, right? Except for my dad, he won't get an iPhone. I don't know why. But I think as time goes on, these therapeutics will get more affordable and be able to be delivered to all people. But until then, we do have to contend with the fact that this is something that I believe that is able to be pursued easier by people of higher economic status. And I'll just reiterate, that's A4LI's mission, right? We don't want a world where only a certain subsect of people are living longer and everybody else is doomed to the existence of our forefathers, right? We want to make sure that everybody can benefit. And if that, we'll only achieve the longevity dividend, which I'm sure you and a lot of our listeners are familiar with, we'll only achieve that economic dividend from longer and healthier lives if everybody is living a longer and healthier life. We need everybody to be able to participate and not be as much of a drain on our healthcare system and be more active and productive in our economy.
But also, I totally agree with you. I don't see a lot of reason why this won't be necessarily available to wide republic and everyone, really, because that's what happens, especially when something is as universally appealing as slowing down aging. The cost ends up being directly opposite of the demand. There's so much billions of people who want it, therefore, you can actually sell it for cheaper, versus if only five people want it, you have to sell each one for $100 million. But even take a step back, right? You have like in terms of American dream and American approach to things, there's all these hardworking people who understand the idea that you want to work and you want to contribute, and in exchange you get something, right? So these things even give you necessary some kind of like a motivation to aspire to. Not everyone can fly private jet. Not everyone can have a boat. But we're not out there saying just because only a select portion of people can have a boat and a jet, let's make them illegal. No one should have them. No, we're saying they should be out there, and that's like a motivation for people to try to get there. There's so many things out there that I can't afford or most people can't afford, but you want to. That's American dream. That's why American dream is to have a house. We're not saying, oh, only rich people have a house, therefore let's have no houses so no one can have a house.
I agree
Like,
with you, right? I'm not one of the people that are opposing it, but I feel like that's the angle that some opposition will take, right?
Probably, but the idea there is to educate people on the fact that this is not a zero-sum game. This is the game where it's, oh, someone having a house doesn't mean you cannot have a house. This is the game where there are multiple winners and anyone can be a winner and should dream and thrive to be a winner. And then also, if there was a scenario where we said, hey, do we all agree that cancer is horrible? Yes, right? If today someone told you met someone on the street and they told you, hey, Dylan, we think cancer is awesome. Cancer, you'd be like, huh, something wrong with this person, right? Cancer is horrible. So we said, okay, cancer is horrible. Let's try to cure it. But guess what? The initial cure is going to be very expensive and only available to the rich. But at the very least, there's a chance that once it becomes more popular, it become available to everyone. And the logical thing would be, okay, let's do it. I
Right.
don't think the logical thing would be, you know what? Let's completely shut it down so that no one can have access to it ever. I think we'd say, hey, let's do it. And at least then there's a chance that it might become available to everyone at some point.
And to go back to what we were talking about a little earlier, I think raising awareness is one of the most important things we can do because we want everybody to be demanding this from policymakers, from pharmaceutical companies, from researchers, from biotechs
Yeah.
and venture capitalists. And I just know from my experience when multiple people reach out about a certain topic to a member of Congress, they listen, right? And the more people we can get to do that, the more that they will prioritize the development of these therapeutics and make them available to all people, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting point in terms of where I think A4LI and longevity movement could punch above its current weight, not above its deserved weight, but above its current weight is that vocal minority that can make an impact because they take the time to reach out to the legislators and try to educate them on issues that are important. So it doesn't have to be a majority. It just needs to be a very dedicated vocal minority.
Yeah, we saw cryptos having the success it's having, and I don't think everybody owns Bitcoin, so I'm with,
Yeah,
yeah.
but I do see, yeah, in terms of the like whatever number of years from now, hopefully not that long, but maybe 10 years or so, I do see a world where longevity is like there is a number of single issue voters for whom the single issue is longevity, you know.
That's part of what we're trying and other organizations are trying to develop. I think going to a member of Congress and trying to convince them to make this their number one priority is a good use of time, but potentially maybe even a better use of our time is finding candidates that want to run on longevity as the topic, right? As the main pillar of their campaign. There will be some news on that on my end in the next few days, so stay tuned. But
Yeah.
I think
And one other thing to mention, just really quickly, because I feel like it doesn't get enough of airtime, is there's longevity that we talk about, sure. Then everything we talk about as it relates to longevity for humans is actually directly applicable and maybe even more than that to dogs. So when I talk to people and I say, hey, would you want to live longer? 9 out of 10 say no. Why would I do that? When you say, okay, would you like your dog to live longer? Everyone says, yes, please sign me up, right? I'll do anything. So that's one area where it probably isn't any opposition. And if anything, people are very excited. And actually, there is a lot of interesting things going on there where FDA is more open to having aging be a label for dogs because it's easier to prove that it's working for dogs, given the shorter lifespan than for humans. And I'm hopeful that over the next few years, if we actually have an intervention that's effective in extending dogs' lifespan, I think it'll be an eye-opening moment for a lot of people, right? 70 million American households have dogs, and if they can give a pill to their dog to live longer, I think the next logical thing is for them to say, why can't I give it to my mom? Why can't I give it to my grandpa?
Me,
And so
yeah.
I think that, yeah, that'd be eye-opening. And another quick thing to mention that also I think, well, and I'm talking more like if you're a politician, you know what? Tell people you can make the dogs live longer. Yeah, I think that'd be a powerful message. And then another one is female reproductive aging, right? Women's reproductive system ages faster than other organs. And by the time they're 40, it's harder for them to have babies. And like if you told them, hey, we can slow down the aging of your reproductive system and you can have babies later in life, there won't anyone, no one would be opposed to that. But there's so much resources going into reproduction and IVF and all those things. So it's another area where I think that's another kind of a analogous area to longevity. that everyone can get on board with.
Absolutely, yeah. The women's menstrual cycles do fast, or not menstrual cycles, women's reproductive systems do age much faster than the rest of our men's and their body. And beyond, obviously, the model that it could be used for in a longevity and aging context in regards to studying how things age and why things age faster, a successful drug that extends reproductive fertility would be a great thing for people. It would be a great thing for having a replacement level generation follow. I'm very bullish on that as well for so many reasons, but I think that that would be something that would wake people up. If we started seeing women having kids in their 50s and 60s, I think people would say, oh, wow, this is possible. Extending vitality for longer is a possible thing. Why don't we do this for our brains or our hearts or our muscles or whatever the organ?
Exactly. Another thing, like you mentioned, it's harder to convince legislators and politicians in terms of having longevity as number one priority, but it may be easier because there's actually some additional kind of numeric, logical, budget-related benefits of
Absolutely.
Slowing down aging, right? If you think about it, over a third of our budget goes towards healthcare, and most of it is spent in the last few years of someone's life. But if we could delay aging, slow it down, and not have some of these conditions that are, in fact, that are caused by aging, I think the latest estimate was that it could probably save somewhere in $1 trillion or so per year of spend. That's another area where it might be easier to educate people on the benefits of this.
Yeah, our national healthcare expenditures are, I think, expected to hit something like $7.5 trillion by 2028. And like 80% of those are age-related health expenditures, right? So if we can, you know, the numbers make sense if when you talk about trillions. And then that this is the whole longevity dividend theory. We're reinvesting those dollars into more fruitful endeavors. People are not using the services, the healthcare services, and instead working or being an active member in society. Yeah, that for us has probably been the most useful pitch point in terms of making politicians understand that this is not just, obviously there's a moral imperative here and we all want people to live longer, but this is actually going to be something that fixes our demography, society, and our institutions, right? Because at this point, we're not going to have enough young, healthy people to function this in the society that we've built. So we need to extend vitality, but also probably extend the fertility window too, to alleviate some of those issues. So yes, I agree with you on that. I want to ask you one more question, Anar. And I like to ask this to all my guests because I like to end on a positive note. You wake up in the morning, you're stressed out or whatever it is, you got to go throughout your day. And that's everybody, right? But what gives you hope when you wake up in the morning? What inspires you? I think I have an idea of what your answer might be, but I would love to hear it in your own words.
It's interesting. What inspires me?
Keep moving forward.
Yeah, I gotta think about it. It's interesting, right? At the end of the day, one thing I do is I do some of these gratitude exercises. And I think once you start thinking in your head and listing all the things we have to be grateful for, I think it's really hard. Within, you know, 30 seconds, you get in the mindset of like abundance. There's so much that we have today that we just take for granted. Even things like coffee and coffee with my oat milk and the hot shower and hot water and electricity and being in a warm place when it's cold outside. There's so many things we take for granted that just listing them and just even the ability to dream about changing the world is already a very important thing that we should be grateful for. So that I think it helps. But then beyond that, I think now is the as optimistic time as it's ever been, right? Between technological progress and who knows, like there's a lot of people who are afraid of AI. But I think actually AI has, we're screwed without AI. But with AI, at least there's a chance that something might change materially. That's something that I think is really interesting. And then all the other related technological progresses in science and biology. And then also on the policy front, right? I think this incoming administration might be one of the most pro-longevity we've seen, like you mentioned, with Jim O'Neill and Dr. Makary. So that's really interesting. And then additionally, the crypto, right? Crypto is becoming more mainstream and crypto is doing well. And there is a surprising amount of people who are in crypto who are also very pro longevity. And so I think it's really interesting to see kind of those people help the longevity movement now that they've been very successful in the crypto movement. So we put all those things together and hopefully, you know, we can change the world at some point in the future. But it, changing the world is no easy task, right?
No, it's definitely not. I believe if we just have to keep putting our head down every day, people like us who are these early adopters and people shouting the message from the rooftop, we just got to keep doing it. And the more we do it, the quicker I think the quicker we'll get to what I think we all want to see. So that's why I and R, you are really a unique character in this field in that you believe what you do, right? You believe in this m as much or more than anybody I've ever met. And I'm confident that you, along with me and many other people, will continue to do this work, even if there are headwinds, even if there are rough times, because we know that at the end of the day, it's going to take people doing the work and getting the word out there to really get us to the point we want to be. So I thank you for being so passionate. You inspire me, and you inspire many others in this field to do what they do. So thank you, Anar.
Of course, yeah, thank you. There's a lot more work to be done, and so we need a lot more people to join the movement.
Absolutely.
Live long and prosper.
Thank you, Anar, for taking the time to join us today. And for those of you at home, I hope you found this conversation as enlightening and informative as I did. If you have anyone you would like to see make an appearance on our podcast, you can send your suggestions to us at info@a4li.org. HSPAN will return in a couple of weeks, but until then, let's live long and prosper.